Hello and welcome to the Sport for Business podcast. I'm your host, Rob Hartnett, and in today's 70th episode of the show, we are joined from New York City by Laura Weber, the designer of Team Ireland's opening and closing ceremony outfits. We chat about fashion and the way it should make you feel, where the connection came to become the designer of such an iconic piece of the Olympic story, and so much more. It really was an enjoyable conversation, and I hope you like it. I hope that the emotion which Laura has poured into this design comes through over the course of the next half an hour. Our Road to Paris series is in partnership with Permanent TSB, sponsors of Team Ireland. You can find out more about what we do day in, day out at sportforbusiness.com. Twice daily bulletins, twice weekly podcasts, as well as great events to bring the Sport for Business community together in person, including a major event on children and sport coming up on May 17th. But before all of that, let's get into the conversation. As I said, all the way from New York with Laura Weber. So delighted to be joined from New York City by Laura Weber, the brand new, freshly minted designer of the Team Ireland Olympic opening and closing ceremony outfits. Tell us a little bit about what this is going to look like and what it will mean for the athletes in your eyes as a designer, Laura.
I think people forget, you know, when you say the word fashion, what that really means to wear something that makes you feel like $1 million. Like when you put on a beautiful dress or you put on a great jacket and you just feel so good about yourself. And I think that that was really the driver for this. I just wanted the athletes just to feel so incredible. I mean, it's Paris, it's the fashion capital of the world. And so that was really just such a driving force to make sure that the athletes feel their best selves.
That sense of 100 years for Team Ireland, of Paris, of fashion, of, you know, the Olympics, did it weigh heavily on your shoulders?
No, not at all. I think that, you know, I've been a part of a lot of big projects and I try not to think about too much about the outcome or the end part. I just really try and focus on the process and making sure along the process that we're, you know, ensuring that everybody's happy and all, you know, ideas and thoughts are listened to and the feedback is taken on board. So no, I don't think it was ever overwhelming about the end product because I'm so focused on the actual process and the making of it all the way along the journey. But the reaction has just been, I mean, so incredible. I couldn't even have asked for a better reaction, honestly. The outpour of love and support has just been so lovely, just so lovely. And I hope that it overpours into the athletes as well and support for them.
Brilliant. That is great. And It's a solitary enough kind of a role being that designer as well. The creative process, I know that there is elements of, you know, collaboration and everything like that you've got to go through. But getting that level of reaction, both from the athletes and from the general public, yeah, it's lovely to hear you saying it in that way as well. Tell us a little bit about some of the details. I'm a bit of a nerd when it comes to some of these things that make it stand out. And the more I saw, the more I read about, the more I heard about all of the little details, from the county's representation to the shamrocks to the embroidering of the names and everything that makes it so individual. Tell us which are the ones that you most like that really made you smile when the thought first popped into your head.
Yeah, I think that, you know, as a starting point, this is 100 years of Ireland competing in the Olympics. And in 1924, we competed in Paris. And now again, in 2024, we're competing in Paris. And so that really was a heavy burden to carry in terms of just trying to find really representational, universal way of marking this. And so when I started thinking and designing and trying to come up with all these really special elements to it, I think one of the biggest things for me was the county patches. It was a huge conversation from the very beginning when I had the idea, because I never wanted it to be where it was portrayed as rivalry between the athletes, but it was more of, you know, you're coming from your county and there's so much county pride. And, you know, we went back and forth, should it just be an Ireland patch or should it be a county patch? And I think that that little special individual part to every athlete where they all unite together in Paris and then they can all, you know, compare and contrast their patch. And so, you know, we wanted to do the artwork proud. We wanted to do, you know, the interpretation proud. So we spent a long time designing all of the patches and using different elements to really represent what that country symbol meant. So that was definitely like a really special one. And I think another element that was really special for me was the embroidered brooch that they wear on their lapel. So this was designed as, you know, it's really common for on St. Patrick's Day to wear the little shamrock bundle. And to represent that in a textile and an embroidery way, to give relief to the garment, to give that little like green on the lapel. So once they're photographed, you see that shamrock. And for it to be done in a tasteful, modern, contemporary way, you know, these are all things that we faced. And so we made the brooch up of four individual shamrocks themselves and then embroider them together so it does become three-dimensional. And there was so much back and forth with that little brooch. So something just like so intricate and tiny, and you know, something that you'll see in passing, was months of development.
Democracy is great, but in a design context it can sometimes be a bit challenging, particularly when you're talking to athletes who might be spread all across the world. You yourself were in New York, the Olympic Federation, who would have been the client as such, based in Dublin as well. How many voices, how many minds were rolled into this? And are you good at taking on board their feedback and distilling that and giving it back? Or ultimately, as the designer, is this your call, your shout?
No, it was definitely collaboration. That's, I think, a really important part of business. Business is give and take, and it is collaborative, and you cannot do anything alone. Like, if you want to be successful in business, you're not going to get far as a one-man team. So I think that, you know, the OFI has just been absolutely incredible. There's definitely been some great support in there. And I have to say, you know, I've been working with the chief de mission, who's Gavin Noble. And, you know, he really listened and he really was just, he's an ex-athlete himself. And so he was coming from, you know, an angle of representation for the athletes at all times. And as the collaboration process, you know, I would present and we would go back and we would think, and, you know, a big question was color. Like, that was probably one of the top questions at the very beginning of the process. You know, green is obviously very important, and to try and push for a different color was a huge conversation. And it was coming from a place of what the opening ceremony means, the Greek Games, the hope of what's going to happen over the next couple of weeks during the games. And so I really wanted to push for white as this modern take on what Ireland is today. And, you know, that was hard because it was a lot of a conversation. It was a big conversation to have. And so they were amazing, though. They really, I felt like the collaboration was an easy process overall.
Well, I'm glad you pushed for it because it does. It tells a very different story than if it had been green, which might not have, you know, it might not have caused any surprise. And I always like that idea of surprise and just knock people out of their rail or their comfort zone a little bit. Love what you say about collaboration. That's very much what we're about as well. We've got 300 organizations, all of whom obviously are my favorite children. But you know, the Olympics is very special. And coming back to what you spoke about, the local importance for each of the athletes, I remember after Tokyo in particular, and after Rio and after London as well, when you're driving around Ireland and you come across a little village in Longford or Offaly or Cork or Kerry, and the local swimming pool where an Olympian trained just has this huge sense of pride and signage and banners wishing them all the luck in the world. It's tribal, but in its very best sense as well. Speaking about place, the story of Laura Webber is not one that was born and bred in New York City, where you are at the moment. Tell me a little bit about your personal story, about where you came from and where you are now.
Yeah, so I'm from Rathfarnham in Dublin, and I was always, you know, I always loved hard work, that's for sure. You know, I definitely kept my head down, I studied, but I got to a stage in secondary school and I really wanted to do art. And, you know, that's a hard, creative field 12 years ago is not what it is today. And so it was definitely a hard decision to make in terms of what does my future look like? And making that decision to do a portfolio and apply to NCAD. And I went to NCAD and I worked, you know, during the summers. I had a full-time job through college, and I worked in London. I worked as management at London Fashion Week, and went on graduating, I really wanted a challenge. And I was like, well, it's now or never, you know, like, where else am I going to go to do fashion? And, you know, I looked into Paris, I looked into Italy, and of course, language is a huge issue. And so I said, let's do New York. Let's just go 1 year, got the visa, and decided to just up and move. And I think that if I had known what was going to be ahead in terms of challenges, I would never, ever have done it. But that's like the beauty of like youth and and like, you know, excitement for life. And so I upped and moved. And on my first day landing in New York, I got the subway from JFK to Herald Square with my suitcase, came to the Garment Center, where I'd known that there was obviously, you know, fashion industry, pure research. I had found a company that had just a landing page, and I showed up at their company and left my suitcase downstairs in the lobby and went up and I said, can I have a job? And they said, what can you do? And I said, well, I can hand bead. And they said, okay, start Monday. So that's how I got my start in New York on my first day. And I was delighted. I was like, I got a job, like I am sorted. But like what came after that? I mean, trying to navigate New York is not an easy thing. Finding somewhere to live, bank account, social security, like all of that. So it definitely wasn't an easy start. I definitely tears home, cried down the phone, like, I'm coming home, this is it, I'm done. But I persevered through. And, you know, I grew within the role, I grew within my career. I, you know, did some consulting, I did some freelance. And as I grew within my career, people started recognizing my name. And, you know, people would send me work to make. And they would send me work to design. They sought me out. Like I was getting packages to my apartment to manufacture pieces. And it was just like, it was a roll on from the work that I had done here. You know, it was just a transition of perseverance. I mean, to say I work probably 120 hour weeks, 7 days a week for 6 years. You know, that's the level of work that I was doing. I mean, not much has changed. I'm still probably in that cycle. But I think that when you love something so much and you have found your niche in what you're doing, that love and passion for what you do always gets you through the hard days. You know, there's nights that I'm here and I have a deadline and it's 3 a.m. and you know, of course I have a team, but to keep the momentum and to keep going and to keep on meeting the deadline and pushing the boundary is, you know, it's discipline and hard work.
It sure is. We're like business soulmates. I'm loving this conversation. I tell you that, you know, sort of if we knew then what we know now, I think if you asked any Olympian or any athlete at the end of a really hard training session at 7 o'clock in the morning, in the rain and the cold, and they're hungry and they've just posted a bad session, they probably think the same. They think, oh God, you know, what am I doing this? But then there is that moment when it just all comes together. And for most, maybe not all, but for most, it is worth it. It is worth that sort of that love and energy and just sheer hard work and determination that you've put into it. Can I ask, were you sporty as a child?
I was. I loved sport. And I think, you know, at the time when I played hockey. I went to a big hockey school. I played hockey for my school and and the local team. And I think that, you know, the lessons that are ingrained in you from training from such a young age, you know, obviously I wasn't training seriously when I was young, but secondary school, I really started training more fiercely. But I think that the lessons that you're learning, you don't realize until later life about team building, about camaraderie, about sportsmanship. Those weren't lessons that were necessarily the words were being used on a day-to-day basis. You were just showing up to training and doing your best and, you know, leaving. But I think that the sense of responsibility that, you know, you're impacted by, if I don't show up, the rest of the team can't play. And there's this like sense of responsibility that you learn from sport that I don't think I was ever aware of until later life. And there's, you know, a sense of belonging and there's a sense of family. And, you know, you're not showing up at 10 o'clock if training starts at 10 o'clock. You have to show up early to warm up. And like things like that, you're not showing up and then you're leaving on the clock at 5 or, you know, 11 o'clock when training's over. Like, no, there's warm down. There's conversations to be had with your teammates. There's like a little bit of training, like on the pitch, like when the coach has left. Like those lessons that I learned from such a young age that I use in every day now in business, in my career, in managing a team, managing, you know, people that are remote, that are in front of me. Those are all lessons that I don't think I would have learned in any other way or any other capacity other than sport. And, you know, even just consistency, consistently showing up, even if you don't feel like it, even if you're not in the mood, like you have to show up for other people. And I think that just ingrained in me such a sense of, you know, it really shaped me as a person. And I am not in any way claiming that I was like, you know, fantastic at sport, but I think just the level of what I was exposed to at secondary school really taught me just so many lessons for life.
Yeah, the beauty is you don't need to be great, that sport will find peer networks that you play against players of the same ability to you. And that's just, it's one of the fabulous things about it. I wish that every young child who was on the point of not going training tonight and ending their sort of their life in sport now could hear what you're saying there, because there is this enormous untapped value that we all get from sport. I guess when you went over to New York then and you said that you played hockey, they were sending you out to the Islanders and asking if you wanted to go out onto the ice.
That's exactly. People had no idea. And I was like, no, hockey on the AstroTurf. Like, they're like, what?
Yeah, field hockey, I think they reference it exactly. in the States. Well, I think you'll probably have Anne McCormack, the CEO of Hockey Ireland, on the phone to you straight after this, asking you to have a look at their team kit and things like that. Tell me a little bit about how it came about that you ended up in the position to design this piece of work for the Olympic Federation. Was it a phone call that you made? Was it an open invitation, or how did it come about?
So I embroidered Dr. Jill Biden's inauguration outfit by designer Gabriella Hurst. And so I did the embroidery. And after that, I got a lot of publicity. And an athlete, an ex-Olympian, Natalia Coyle, reached to me and she was getting married, and she's a pentathlete and she is just such a phenomenal person. And she asked me to embroider her wedding dress. And so through that process of working with her, we just became really good friends. And we would chat back and forth on WhatsApp and we would Zoom and we just became really good friends. And, you know, conversations, I'd be like, oh, can I see your kit? Can I see your horse riding jacket? Can I see the insides? Can I see the construction? And she would send me photos. And I was like, wow, that's interesting. And that's really what sparked the idea. Mm. And another kind of overlapping, stars aligning, was I was a part of working on the embroidery for the Ralph Lauren Team USA. And, you know, I was doing it here many, many years ago, 2013. And I said, you know, back then it was just an idea that I always had. But then Natalia Coyle really brought it forward with just speaking with her and seeing what, you know, she's previously worn. And I put together a presentation and I presented to the OFI. And so that's really how the conversation started. It was something that I really wanted, in terms of just, you know, you get to a stage in your career, and especially when you've emigrated. I left Ireland, you know, I went away. I was lucky enough to be able to stay in my field, this field that I'd studied, and learn so much. Like the learning curve, I just can't even explain to you the learning curve. And to be able to take a talent that I've learned overseas and bring it back to Ireland and give it back to the country was just, you know, it was something that was always there. I always wanted to bring back a part of what I learned overseas and give it back. And, you know, I was lucky enough to be supported through that and to be able to give back to Ireland for, you know, everything that they've given me in terms of being Irish. And I mean, to be Irish is so incredibly special. And that sense of pride maybe only happens when you live away to the level that I'm at, because I'm not sure I felt this level of pride when I lived there. But then living away from it, the sense of pride is just, I mean, I could burst. So that was really, yeah. I think
it's always the way that you, it's not that you have to go away, but you certainly become more Irish the further away you travel from Ireland. I totally agree. Out of the rushes, out of the detail of daily life, and we see it perhaps through emerald tinted glasses, but that doesn't make us any the poorer. In fact, it enriches us. Well, look, it's a fabulous design. The details, like the team itself, you know, we're a few months away yet from everything being finalized and from those boats heading off down the Seine with your outfits on those athletes. But we don't know yet for sure. Like, we're tracking towards 120, 125, maybe a few more than that. Like, what's the deadline for you in terms of if somebody qualifies, say, 2 weeks out? Is that a big rush job for you? Do you have to then get to work to produce their bespoke, unique, individual outfit?
Yes, that's exactly what happens. You know, something that has been very challenging through the process is the range of size. So we have, you know, such an immense range, from a gymnast to a rower, shoulders to, you know, a boxer. Like, there's just such a range. And so patterning has definitely been interesting. So we will be ready for anyone that does qualify last minute. We have a great system in place now. We've, you know, developed an amazing system over the months to ensure that we're ready. So if anyone qualifies, we can be on guard and on stand to get them their uniform.
Great. And speaking about on stand, I guess you're going to be there on the banks of the Seine watching as the athletes go by.
You couldn't keep me away. I will be there. I will be there for opening ceremony and just so excited. I think the excitement comes from, you know, just seeing the athletes feeling great and looking great. And I think that that's the driver right now for sure.
Great. I would love to be able to watch it through your eyes on the 28th of July, which is when the opening ceremony will take place. Yeah, there is so much more that we could talk about, but we're going to have to bring it to a close now. But I'd love to have a chat with you again just about sport and fashion. We've got Paul Galvin here, who we've done some work with in the past as well, who is a fashion designer with a strong sense of what sport is and, you know, how it can be defined. I'd love to get the two of you together maybe onto a stage at some point after the Olympic Games.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Give you an excuse to fly back to Ireland one more time. But for the moment, look, thanks for all the work that you've put into it. Those 120-hour weeks, they will pay off for those of us who get to enjoy the benefits of the visibility of your work. Thank you very much, Laura Weber.
Thank you for speaking with me. It was absolutely lovely. Take care.
Magic. Thanks, Laura. That was great.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
I love that emotion that was pouring out of you. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. I was getting emotional just even speaking about it. I will tell you one story. So we had the photo shoot, and I had made two big flags for the photo shoot themselves.
So then, yeah.
The night before, I was dyeing the fabric to get that color in a dye bath here. So when I took the flags out, I had them all ironed and pressed, and then we had the photo shoot, and I took them out and they were blowing in the wind. And everyone on set got so emotional just seeing the flag blowing, and they were just like tipping the shoulders of the athletes, and everybody got emotional. It was such an emotional moment. And brilliant. I was like, I never, ever would have thought that, you know, something I was dying in a dye bath last night would, you know, emulate such emotion on the photo shoot. So, yeah, that was just a little tidbit.
That's beyond a US presidential inauguration as well. That's pretty cool.
Definitely.
Thanks to Laura for taking the time to explain the process that goes into such an undertaking. It was great to see behind, or to hear behind, the curtain of what goes into the design and the importance of every little detail. You can find out more about us and what we do day in, day out at sportforbusiness.com. Twice daily bulletins, twice weekly podcasts, and great events to bring the Sport for Business community together in person. Coming up on the podcast, we will be chatting with Brian Malloy, the newly elected president of the Camogie Association, and Pat Fenlon of Electric Ireland on sponsorship and the continued importance of darkness into light. Thank you, as ever, for taking the time to listen in.